the blessings of
love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. the precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibited precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Tutiyampi tatiyampi sabaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
I've been looking again at directing attention and seeing how that feels like the crux of the matter. I was reminded of something I read. very simple, but this is what my paraphrase of it, but the Buddha taught that the wise person learns to basically focus attention on one thing at a time. And that the task of these are definitely my words, wrangling the impulses of the mind to follow the conscious will. I remember that phrasing. The conscious will. That's our task, and that supposedly Gandhi said of that task, it requires the patience of one who is attempting to empty a sea, an ocean, with a teacup.
That's a task in itself. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The patience. It requires the patience of one who is emptying an ocean with a teacup. And I've just been, I've really been watching this fascinating thing of, so I'll read something, or I'll have an experience, or I'll do the dishes, or whatever, and just have this amazing experience, right? Just being here, just, oh, joy and well-being. And so take reading, for example. So I'm reading, let's say I read something, little something, and it has that experience, wow, you know? And then go back to it some other time, and it's like, wait, what? Where is that experience?
Thinking that the experience is in the...
Is in the dishes, or in the whatever it is.
In the reading, okay.
And being struck again that the experience is in being there for it. Mm-hmm. So when I'm reading something, it really, almost goodness, could be anything. You know, it really could. Because there's truth everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, life is everywhere in everything. You know?
Yes, yes.
And when we're there for it, it's amazing and joy producing and expansive, and it feels like the way conditioning gets a hold of that is to split the attention. Mm-hmm. If even just on the most subtle level. Mm-hmm. So going back to reading that thing again and not realizing at first that the attention is not actually in reading that thing. Mm-hmm. The attention is on, do I feel the way I felt the last time I read this?
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, it's not actually there with it, it's looking for something that what was associated with it.
And that, oh, as you were saying that, I saw it in a flash and then it went, but of course what produced the experience to begin with was just presence. There was no one there looking for an experience.
You're almost caught off guard as you're just reading this thing.
And the joy just arises because that's what's there.
Exactly.
You know, we hear it everywhere all the time from everything, that life is joy, life is well-being, life is love, life is, and then just that something gets laid over that.
Yeah.
And the minute that something, mm-hmm. we're not identifying with that something, all of that just is.
Right.
And that's what happens. Mm-hmm. And that the way conditioning then goes to take that away is to, quote, want it.
Yeah, well, it's an experience that I want. It could even be an experience that I don't want. It really doesn't matter as mm-hmm. long as it's something that conditioning can get for itself.
Yeah. Yeah, so just, it's a recommitment to, I guess I talked about a little bit on this last Sunday too, just practicing.
Mm-hmm. With the patience of someone who's emptying the ocean with a
teacup. Exactly. Just,
it's interesting because as you were saying that, it's like, there's no question that this person is thinking that they're going to actually empty the ocean with the teacup.
Uh-huh.
See, if the thing was in the experience of, I'm going to empty this ocean with this teacup, it's almost like the actual accomplishment of that is not something that can produce that kind of patience.
Yeah, I don't know see if this is what you're saying, that the patience, let's see, just being there, just being present,
mm-hmm.
there's no looking ahead to how long is this going to take and is this even really possible, or, but
it's just
the being the... Yeah, I mean
the joy of doing that.
The joy of doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like you said, it's not even really. It's like the implication is, of course.
Yeah.
We can do this. even that, it's hard to put words.
Right. Yeah.
But there's no sense of what this is futile.
Right.
You know, what are you doing anyway?
Yeah, it's funny. It reminds me of another reading of someone talking about Prometheus. Is it Prometheus? No. It's another fellow, someone who else was done unto by the Greek gods or something. It'll come to me in a second, someone will probably know, but just someone who's pushing up a big boulder up the hill.
Oh, yeah.
That guy. And the idea that we have to imagine that this person is happy, otherwise it truly is a punishment. It's all in the perspective of, our projection on this person doing that. And so...
Yes, and thank you, because what that connects up is, so that practice of just doing fully, wholeheartedly, whatever it is, filling the water, the glass with water, doing the dishes, walking out of the building, putting the slippers up, doing that, the joy is in that, not doing that so that I can get present and get what I want.
Yeah, so that is literally tying into what you started with, is about the crux of the matter is directing the attention.
Yeah.
The attention is on being here, and in being here, it's, the outcome of,
everything.
Why is there so much merit in putting on my slippers versus reading something that was inspirational?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't look to see what I'm going to get out of putting my slippers on.
Yeah, exactly. But that's what conditioning does. And
right.
That connects up with the other big thing I've been looking at is the habit to go to the mental process.
Exactly.
Wow. Now, let's put on our slippers mindfully. Let me think about how that's going to,
Right,
and
exactly.
Drag it all up into the mind to kill it.
Yes,
to kill it.
Yeah, to kill it or to make a religion out of it. Like, some guy gets enlightened by a creaking board and all of a sudden everybody's like, we can't fix these creaking boards.
Because,
someone else will just have the same experience. And, it's not in the thing.
It's not in the thing. It's the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, thank you for your perspective.
I love that image of the ocean and the teacup. And yesterday I was doing a task that felt a little bit like that. I was actually cleaning out some file drawers. And, you know, when I first started, I really brought to it this openness and I don't know, and kind of this joy, and it was really fun. And then I started focusing on how many more there were, how I was going to get rid of some of that stuff.
I did, and
it got increasingly less fun. But one of the things I came across, which I was just reminded by the ocean and the teacup, in those files, I realized there's sort of two kinds of things that I save. I save things that I think I might need to protect me, you know, like records of things that if such and such were to happen, I would need to be able to refer to this or prove this. They're kind of defensive savings, you know. But then there's other things I save because they really touch something in me, and I want to be able to come back to that. And one is I have this little folder of cartoons, and one of them is this drawing of these people on this really wide, flat place with shovels, and it says at the bottom, "Work begins on the Grand Canyon." It's the exact same thing, you know. Just okay, well, one shovel at a time. I don't know. It makes me laugh every time I see it.
Because, were they smiling?
Huh?
Were they smiling?
I'm not sure they were, but anyway. I think it because it brings me back to that place of you have to start somewhere. You know, it's not about the task. It's not about getting it done. It's not about getting done. It's about being there to do it.
Yes. Yeah.
And I've really been looking at how, I don't know, my words for it this morning are how the experience goes from being closed and small to being wide and open. And that, you know, it goes back and forth. And sometimes I'm bringing wide openness to my day and life, and sometimes I'm there in my little mental gyration, usually around one particular issue or sensation, and that's all I can see.
Yeah.
And that's the whole difference. I mean, it's that difference in being that makes the difference between joy and suffering.
Yeah, yeah, literally. I mean, that's how we started yesterday with the task you were working on, cleaning up the file drawers.
Yeah.
It sounded like it started off with just, well, let's do this.
Yeah.
Just wide open, and then there was an assessment about how you're doing.
Right.
And how many more still to go through. Yeah. And started to close back down on it.
Yeah.
And started to get focused on that, mm-hmm. instead of just,
yeah.
doing that.
Exactly. And, you know, and I have, you know, a couple of particular karmic contents that if conditioning can, you know, light up that button, you know, conditioning can say, okay, this one, it's just automatic. I'm down to, oh my God, you know, all about me, all about what's wrong, all about suffering, you know, and it's just, I mean, it's, and you know, so it feels like the stimulus and the response are still kind of automatic. Conditioning can do X and the response is Y without any gap. But so the practice is just then to bring attention to that and notice, is that so? Does, you know, I mean, the practice is to open back up again. I mean, it doesn't seem possible yet not to go to the close down with that stimulus. But at least the practice is then, how do I go from there to back open again?
Do you know what all those stimulus are?
Yeah, you betcha. It's not a mystery what the stimuli are.
Oh, okay.
No, it's definitely, I mean, there's two areas of content that can do it.
Uh-huh.
You know, now maybe if I were ever to not be at the mercy of those two, there may be some others under that that are more subtle.
Yes.
But uh-huh. these two are so obvious that you can't miss them.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah.
So they're so obvious you can't miss them, and you can kind of see them coming?
No, that's the trouble. I still haven't got to the point where I can see them coming. I don't see it till it hits, you know, and then I'm...
then
I have to breathe my way out of it.
And it's, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, in a way, I'm surprised I don't see it coming because it's, you know, it's coming for decades.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's...
And maybe it comes in different disguises.
Yeah, it does. You know, and it does. I don't. Well, maybe there isn't anything. I would say I don't know what precedes it. I don't know what causes it to want to do that. I know what it's like when it happens. I'm not so sure if there's a lead up. I'm not so sure there is. I think it's just this is how we know we can get her.
Right.
So.
So just bring it up.
It does.
And it just does, and then you get caught
into
it, and you're trying to figure out how to get out of it. And,
Yeah, and just, you know, just being with that happening, you know? I mean, it's like, I was just thinking in a way of the image of the bud and the flower were coming to me as those small and larger places. And, you know, when the bud's all closed up, it's not necessarily wrong. I mean, it has to be in that stage for some part of the time, so... You know, when I get into that small place to, you know, recognize it and breathe into it, but not to make it wrong, not to add suffering on top of suffering.
Yeah. That there's somehow this experience is not part of. It's not that it's wrong.
Yeah, it's not that it's just this is what this being does.
There's then it's just your attention onto that.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, then it's just the, how am I going to get out of this? And
that's right. How do I move my attention?
It's that mental gyration thing that you're saying.
Yeah, how do I move my attention back, given that it's been taken over?
Right.
You know, how do I get back to directing it rather than having it directed for me?
Thank you. Well, I love all the metaphors today. The ocean and the Grand Canyon and the boulder. And so I had this interesting experience last night of I had to make a presentation someplace, and it's the kind of presentation I've made for years. And so in the course of it, I spoke a word that once it was out, it was like, oh my God, you know, where did that come from? And it was an unfortunate word, I think, a descriptive word. And it's one I've never used before, you know. And it was it created a very dualistic kind of thing. So I've been watching conditioning just land on that, you know, and go to the how in the world could you have, you know. And so one of the things I'm seeing is it's harder to kind of just step away from conditioning when it feels like I've done something that actually was hurtful or kind of ugly. So that's just interesting to see. But looking at all the metaphors this morning, one of the things I was seeing was, you know, the story of the Sisyphus, I think it is, that's
yes.
pushing the boulder. What I was looking at is I wonder if it started as a pebble. And then actually in pushing it and pushing it and pushing it, it was like a snowball. And then actually he created the boulder. Because it feels like one way of looking at it is, I mean, my experience is that one word out of maybe 10 years of speaking is really a pebble. It's a speck. But if conditioning keeps pushing that, in very short order it becomes a boulder.
Oh, yeah. It just keeps adding to it and adding to it.
Yeah. And it really is that thing where it suddenly becomes an entire world, you know. And so just watching the process of just trying to step back from that, trying to step out of that, and the main thing I was seeing this morning as I was walking down here recording about this is to come back to compassion for this person. Because even trying to step back from it, there's still, there's two things. There's still a focus on it.
Yes.
And there's still a not attending to who's really feeling bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's a way to get your attention onto what's wrong, which is all that's really trying to accomplish anyway, and ignoring you. And it's like you it being like, you know, the vastness of it all, and you know, it's this little word is a speck, and making it all of everything,
right?
And losing focus on you know, who, like, really, like, over this, you know what I mean? Like to abandon you,
yes,
for it,
yeah,
and to cover over you by making this bigger than it really is.
Yeah, yeah, and yes. There was something else I saw. Well, I was appreciating. Oh, I know. I was appreciating the patience with the cup and the ocean too, because the other scramble that happens is, how do I make sure I never do this again? Mm-hmm. How do I make sure that this kind of thing never happens again? And of course, it's impossible, mm-hmm, other than just be present in the moment and just see any given moment, just see what happens. And probably there are many unfortunate things out there still lying there, but the task is really to not turn those pebbles into boulders and not make, you know, there's two things that happen with him, I project. So if he starts with a pebble, the rolling it up the hill created a boulder, and all his focus upon it created it as a boulder. Mm-hmm. And to leave the pebble be a pebble and focus on the person, and say, you know, what do you need right now?
Yeah, to shift your focus away from what's wrong to the goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the goodness, you don't have to worry about this person doing something unfortunate, or even, because the focusing on the unfortunate is focusing on that there's something wrong.
That's right.
It's almost reinforcing it. It's actually making that pebble into a boulder again.
And making that person into...
Exactly. You know, somebody who has to do that.
Yeah. And affirming that was a bad person has to undo the bad thing.
Exactly, right. Rather than just focus on, this is a good person.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because in the email class, you know, we had to come up with, what is the practice that supports your being available to life, I think it was. And so I have this picture of this fabulous little kitten that I've had above my desk for a couple of years now. And it's this sort of reddish cat, you know, with these huge blue eyes. Mm-hmm. And just, it's just looking out. And I look at it and my heart just leaps, because it's just total innocence and delight. And I have it posted around now. And I had not looked at that. But as you were talking, I thought, that's what I need to do, is simply come back to that. Mm-hmm. Because that's the truth. Mm-hmm. And all the other stuff about pebbles and boulders is a story.
Yeah, it's just mm-hmm, trying to distract you away from that goodness, that innocence.
Yeah, thank you.
I've been having the experience of the dauntingness and the ocean, moving the ocean with the teacupness of focusing the attention, continually focusing the attention away from the conversation. And the other part of it is going up to the head. Those two habits are so entrenched and so continual and constant, and, you know, that it's just been feeling like, oh God, is this even possible? at times it just feels, you know, that's what I'm just constantly finding.
Yeah, you're that person with that teacup thinking that you're going to actually empty that ocean. It's like,
maybe,
is it really?
Yeah, constantly coming back and realizing, oh, conversation, oh, mm-hmm, up in the head, uh-huh, conversation up in the head.
uh-huh. And you must continuously keep seeing that, or conversation is going up into the head with the same patience as someone emptying the ocean with a teacup.
Yeah. And one thing that I wanted to say has been really helpful, and it was a reminder from the email class, and that is the attitude of reverence for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that really brings the attention, mm-hmm, to what is happening in the moment. You know, because if I'm not paying attention, then I'm not acting and treating what I'm dealing with reverence. Mm-hmm. And so just practicing reverence seems to be sort of a method of doing that without consciously trying to do it, you know?
Right, yeah. Like, mm-hmm, you're just approaching it with that attitude of mind.
Yeah.
Just approaching things with the attitude of reverence.
Yeah, and it kind of includes a sense of everything being connected, and that I'm here, and you know, and all of that. And I got an email of the most amazing story that also sort of tied in with this reverence and with everything being connected. And and it was about this man who dedicated his life to rescuing animals that were in trouble or things were happening to the animals, and particularly he worked with elephants. And he died. And 31 elephants walked in a single file line 12 miles to his house. How they knew he died. They stayed there for 2 days and they did not eat while they were there, seemingly having a vigil at his house. And then they left and they walked back. And that just touched me so deeply, that to know that on some kind of a cellular level, you know, we're connected, and the things that we do matter in that way, that the animals that were cared for had this memory of this person, and somehow they knew how to get to where he was after he died. And somehow that's related to not wasting time being up here.
Right. Yeah. And because then you miss out on all of that.
All those
interconnectedness.
That sense of reverence, mm-hmm. that connects us all together to everything.
Yeah.
You know, to the pebbles, to the rocks, to the all the other metaphors.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to keep that in our awareness,
mm-hmm.
as a way of feeling that belonging, that connectedness, or that something that is just far more important than just this.
I'm glad you said that too, because it does foster a sense of belonging, because there's, in going through the day with reverence, there is that relational connection to everything, and it does feel like that is a way of being that allows for the feeling of belonging, because it fosters that sense of connection.
Yeah, it does. It fosters that sense of connection, because just to have that attitude toward it, you cannot see yourself as separate from it.
Yeah.
You know, because, I don't know, it's like that exercise we did where, you know, we just went around and just asked objects, you know, I love you, do you love me? You know, and just, it touches into that.
Yeah, and it feels really good, too, to be engaged in life in that way, you know, mm-hmm. even the small little things, you know.
Yeah.
Instead of tossing something aside, you place it nicely, mm-hmm. and it just feels different than tossing it.
Right.
Yeah. It makes a really big difference.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Sherry. Sorry, Rhea. I'll try to get over to the side.
Your story, Cameron, really touched my heart about the elephants. Let me take a breath here.
Do you want me to come back? I'm sorry. I just saw your hands.
Yes, that would be good.
I saw your hands earlier, and maybe the moment passed.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
That was really beautiful. I know that when I'm practicing, the thing that really seems to bring me back the most, or you know, keep me in presence, is that letting, you know, that some kind of reflection of life's gratitude in here. So it really struck me one day that, you know, since there is such a thing as gratitude in the world, mm-hmm. that means that it's a reflection of life's gratitude. Mm-hmm. And life is grateful for everything. Mm-hmm. And I never actually thought of it that way. Mm-hmm. You know, life being grateful, life's grateful for me and for all of us and for everything that it's created, that's part of life, you know, that it's answering. And so there's this strong, in here, this strong reflection of that, that I can access a lot. And that seems to bring me right into that relationship, say, with life, rather than relationship with this part that's going on that's always trying to take me out of life.
Yes, yeah, to be in relationship with the gratitude rather than the thing that's trying to take you out of that.
Yes, because the gratitude, I notice when it's reflecting, the gratitude's being reflected, then that's the joy comes and the love comes, it all comes there, the reverence, you know, everything's there with that. And life has a whole different, of course, as we know, the light room, and there's a whole different life experience than, yeah, like the, all the images that we've been talking about, than the little, you know, the pebble is turning to a boulder or
yes,
like that.
Yeah. The attention stays on what is there in life, which is the gratitude and the reverence and the joy, instead of focusing on the pebble being made into a boulder.
Yeah, that seems to be what's really real, you know, and it makes things real. Well, you know, and when that's not there, you know, not only do I miss most of what's going on, you know, then I'm caught in what isn't even real. You know, it's just a complete made up, you know, something conditioned is making up.
Yeah. So it's like whenever that happens, when the attention gets brought up in the head, it's about conditioning rather than what's real, which is what's here when the attention isn't going up.
Yeah, and then the other thing I was, when we were talking about these different images and then the cartoon of the, in the one with the cartoon, it made me think of the cartoon that we've had going around the Sangha for years, and this one has really impacted my life because I saw it years ago, and it's just, it's so perfect. And when I say it, well, I'll know it probably, but it's the one where these people are all in a row with wheelbarrows full of rocks, and it's a never-ending job, and there's devils all around them, you know, and you could tell they're in hell. And they all have this really mad, sad, you know, look on their faces, except this one who's whistling. And one devil says to the other, you know, no matter what we do, he doesn't stop whistling. And he was smiling and happy. That has impacted my life all, you know, very much, because it really goes back to what we were saying in the beginning, that it doesn't matter what's going on. What matters is what's, you know, what attitude of mind is being, I like to say, kind of reflected in here, you know, than what's actually happening.
It's a what's going on here, not a what's going on out here.
Yeah, it's am I connected to life, or am I focused on the boulders,
right.
More rocks?
More rocks, exactly. Yes. Yeah. So it's just basically asking ourselves, are we focused on that, or are we focused on all of life?
Self-hate has really had a really big storm the last couple of days, and you know, lots of memories of me doing or saying, you know, stupid or hateful things coming up, and sending me pictures of animals and people suffering and dying, and just really intense, and and I was throwing every, you know, technique I could think of at it, you know, come back to the breath, connect to this present moment. Remember that you are a perfect expression of life in form in this moment. Begin again in this moment. Everything is fine. Everything you need is in this moment. And the storm just intensified, and finally, I just let go of all of it and just was with it. And in that moment, the storm sort of abated. And so, what I got from that was that the techniques are great, but if it's all just thinking about them and not being with it, whatever the experience is, that seems to be the point, is just being with what is. And letting go of everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, letting go of the ideas and or the techniques, letting go of the storm of self, just letting go of it all, and allowing it to be there.
Just being with what is and accepting it, what is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I really appreciated having that experience.
Yeah.
And so in a sense, I appreciated having the storm, because without it, I would not have seen that.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, that without that, and seeing how it was tried, there was an attempt to do something about it. And realizing that, well, maybe it's not the way I thought it was. Maybe it's not. Maybe that's not the solution. Maybe that's, so we get in situations where we're doing something about it. Maybe that's not it. Just being. Just accepting that, allowing it to be there.
It reminds me of one of Sherry's quotes that I like. Happiness is not getting what we want. Happiness is wanting what we get. And conditioning really wants to control a lot.
Yeah. Even your well-being, you know, in a sense.
Mm-hmm. And so... Thank you.
That reminds me of something I heard about a long time ago, about these people who, they were protesting something. I don't know what it was. It might have been like, I don't know if it was like an arms factory or something, but it had something to do with, or maybe it was a nuclear or something or other, but like there was a building. And what they would do is they talked about it as witnessing. So they would go to the building and they would just sit there and they would witness what was going on. Mm-hmm. And I found that to be incredibly powerful. Mm-hmm. So they're not making anything wrong about it. They're not engaging with it. Mm-hmm. They're just sitting there witnessing what's happening. Mm-hmm. And I've always taken that as a model for working with self-hate. Mm-hmm. And really with everything that goes on, but particularly with self-hate. Because mm-hmm. it does seem like... engaging with it as if it's real keeps everything going.
Yeah.
You know, even if we're like, there's a way in which, you know, we can apply the tools of practice that's not engaging with it as if it's real. Mm-hmm. But I know I can get into that same thing that I think was being talked about of using the tools, but not really from a place of being, but more of a place of doing or
right.
You know, trying to make it different.
Making it different, this is wrong, this is not an experience that I actually want, but what you're saying is just being there as a witness. So you have it in your awareness that it's not anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just not, it's not making it real by going up against it or endorsing it or anything like that.
Right. Yeah, and I've been practicing this recently. It's been really powerful for me because just there's a lot of stuff going on right now, and some of it is self-hate, some of it is just other things, and I'm getting pulled in and out of it, and I'll go all over the place, but it feels like there is, at least I'm attempting to practice, and it feels like there is kind of through it that quality of witnessing, or maybe they are listening or whatever, mm-hmm. but witnessing it, mm-hmm. and it's really powerful, mm-hmm. because it, what my heart needs in relationship to it happens, mm-hmm. right. Without really me doing anything to make it happen, mm-hmm. just from being, or in the way that I think we're just being talked about, just being with it, mm-hmm. just being with it, and it just happens. Yes. And there's openings that happen around it, and possibility that opens around it, and stuff. And I think if I was, I mean, I'm doing this also because I can't help it. But you know, getting in there, trying to do something about it. Uh-huh. But that feels like that closes things up, and it doesn't. The what needs to happen, which is something that comes from not me, but from life.
Yes.
It makes it harder for that to happen when I do that.
Yeah, because there is this person who's trying to get something, and all the attention is on getting the, you know, an experience or something to drop in. It's like trying to get an insight. It's
right.
Like, good luck. You know? It's like, you can't do it. It's mm-hmm. like, it's going to look around for everything, you know, and meanwhile, that looking around is distracting me from it, like providing it, or just dropping in.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's me trying to get something.
Mm-hmm.
For myself, mm-hmm. and I said it earlier. It's almost like because I had the experience of it. It's like not like I can even try to be pushing something away. I can try to be grabbing onto something, but it's like either way, it's helpful for conditioning. It's unhelpful for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's helpful for conditioning. Unhelpful for you to push it away or cling to it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So just witnessing and being there with it.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of that's kind of in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Jim. Talking about emptying the ocean, the teacup, or digging the Grand Canyon, brought up the Suzuki motion, that if we lose the spirit of repetition, our practice can become hard. And it's kind of spurred me to sit here and look at repetition and how self-hate, ego, egocentric karma conditioning is repetition. Mm-hmm. It is. And yet, it will undermine, it undermines my practice with repetition and boring.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you just can't do it. Mm-hmm. You just can't come back. You just can't redirect the attention over and over. It's just too hard. And I have a whole sport. but it's interesting to see the projection.
Yeah. But it's too boring. It's too repetitious.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's helping me, yes. In these last couple of days, I too have been assailed by self-hate.
Mm-hmm.
And I dared do something. The voices just tried really hard to keep me from doing it, but it did anyway, something I've never done before. And it was with a group of people, and it was filmed.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the film. And in no degree whatsoever did I meet conditioning standards. and that precipitated the big self-hate.
Oh, something.
And so the way that this all ties in, let's see. I'm better on paper. If I don't repeat, if I of nature. Self-hates, dictates. Mm-hmm. It will find something. It will do its best or its worst to let me know that that was not okay. This is what happens when you do what I tell you not to do. Mm-hmm.
And so it saw it as something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's of course, looking...
You know, the impulse came up to do this thing. It was really fun while I was doing it.
Uh-huh.
I had to leave home and go away and stay overnight and make plans. And before I did that, it was just, gosh, this is too hard. This is too much. Let's don't go. Mm-hmm. Let's just stay here and... You just stay here with me. I'll have a good time. So I went away all the way yesterday. And I didn't listen.
Right.
And it has been doing its best to make me pay the price.
And that's what it does.
And so yes, and that's what it does. And so just in holding on, you know, in that way that whatever it is, whatever, you know, the way that practice is a little wheel in us that keeps going whether we're doing it or not. And it gets me kind of down here and keeps me just not quite completely chipping over into the abyss. So the point is, there's something about repetition in all of this. Mm-hmm. There's something about ego's repetition and that practice repetition. It's just interesting to see.
Yeah.
And to see that, what, how it sets up that.
Yeah.
How it's both what it does unfailingly, it capital IT, and then it unfailingly says that self-same process is boring in its practice.
Yeah. And basically projecting itself onto whatever it is that it's seeing. So in this circumstance, you did something that you've not done before. And it had a whole lot to say about it.
Yeah.
And it was clear. It's clear that it was it saying that about it, and that it would just keep saying it about it over and over again, so that you would never do something like that again.
No, you better not. This is the result. Mm-hmm. You might have thought it was done, but so I guess the. I guess I'm
going
to think of something else I need to do.
Do you own that film?
Do I?
Do you own that film?
Or have you? You know, it's an iPhone thing. Someone put it on the internet.
Okay. Yeah. Would you watch it again? I'm just curious.
that's a big question. That is a big question.
Would you watch it again with someone who loved you?
Now you're going to make me cry. Thank you for that. I will.
A lot of disjointed things that have come up. I can still relate to that. You know, just looking back over my life, so many fun social things that didn't get attended because I'll stay home with it. You know, the truth of the matter is, you pay the price either direction. You can stay home with it, or you go have fun and then stay home. So you might as well have some oases of fun in there and practice that. Uh-huh. That's what I've observed. And and what also is just coming up to for me is just about how we all work out our own salvation diligently. You know, how it's you know, we come to group, we hear about tools, yeah. we it's all just there, and it all it just becomes a part of us in a way, and then we are left to discover it for ourselves. Yeah. And there's just no way, no other way.
Yeah.
And actually wouldn't want it to be any other way.
Right, it can't be any other way. Right. It's like no one could ever do it for us. And at the same time, just practicing and having it be part of everything that we do.
Yeah. And. You know, since we're throwing all these force and stuff, it is like what Sherry says, you're walking in the mist.
Exactly.
With your coat, and just slowly getting soaked, and you know, it just doesn't, you're not aware of it.
Right.
Yeah.
You're soaked. You're
soaked through the bone, and transformed by it. Yeah. And the image of the cup in the ocean is just the last. It's great because I can see karmically this person, just about every task she approaches is the ocean and the deep. You know, it's like, oh, that's never going to work. You know? And I've been looking a lot at that lately, and the inertia that leads to, you know, when that's the... Yeah. That's the starting point, right. You know.
Yeah, oh, wow, no, that's something to look forward to.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's the kind of thing that does, you know, in my old life, that send me to the couch. Like, wow. I need to lay here and think about this for a bit more.
Exactly.
And,
to get my energy up.
So, I've done that many times, too. And seeing just, you know, really, it's one step in front of the next. It is not doing.
Yeah, because sitting there on the couch, who are we going to be sitting on the couch with?
Exactly. And, you know, so I'm taking the ocean a teacup at a time, doing that with attention and joy. So, you know, like was it earlier, it doesn't matter if the ocean gets empty or not. And the fun part is that, you know, things have been actually, I've been getting some things, you know, some things have been happening just because that willingness to just take, you know, okay, I'm just going to do this one thing, and then this one thing, and then this one thing, and...
That's so fascinating you just said that, because it's just like that, Sherry's, you know, one thing project, to take on one thing to do, and because that makes it manageable, it takes that out of the hands of conditioning, where we have to take on everything, finish this big something or other,
right.
So it's just this obstacle, that because conditioning has this idea about how this ocean needs to be emptied, or this rock needs to go up a hill, or this project that you're working on needs to be completely finished, but you're just doing one thing.
And just the joy that comes from, you know, taking that one step and finishing it. And I'll just throw this out. I don't know how it all goes together, but I have been looking at fun and play. It's been my assignment for quite a while. And I have taking that out of the hand of conditioning, and also make that a really big deal.
Yeah.
And hard. I don't have all the ingredients to do a fun thing and blah 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 blah. So I sat down and left a really young part of me who's quite a fun person. She really is a fun person. I let her make the list, you know, about what's fun. And you know what? Every day I do all the fun stuff she has on that list. You know? It's nothing. I mean, you know, she likes to, you know, play in the dirt. She likes to chop things up. She likes to cut things out. She likes to, you know, all these things that I still do every day, but they were not done from that place of reverence and that place of 100% attention that the child brings to it and makes them fun.
Yeah. Wow, the child knows what's fun. That it's not, well, it's in everything you do already.
Yeah.
It's just that the perspective isn't that of the child's.
Right.
The child's the one who brings the joy to it.
Yeah.
Whereas conditioning is like, well, I need to have these certain circumstances and it's not
right. I need to have this set of paints and show them that I have to have this particular paper and I have to, you know, I have to have this particular set of people and I have to, you know.
And so you'll just never have fun.
Never have fun. And so, anyway, so that was really cool to see, and rather joy producing, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So, another great Sunday morning.
Thank you. Thank you. Jen.
Something in our last conversation just reminded me of that image of a butterfly and China flaps its wing and. And I just, you know, so 2,500 years ago, the Buddha said this thing that then struck Gandhi to create this image, and then this person wrote about it in a book, and then, you know,
just... a cartoon about shoveling the Grand Canyon.
It's just amazing. It's just, you know, how it just goes through.
It just
through.
Goes, yeah.
It's funny, the physical image that came up with that was that... I saw a video recently where, you know, where masses of people come together to create a physical, like a dance, and that motion of the wave, where, you know, so at this end of the crowd they start doing the motion and then it goes through the, and how, at least to me, that's always moving. There's something very moving about that. I wonder if that's like it's a physical representation of that kind of connection that moves through in that way.
Like that, the physical connection of how it all just moves through, like that wave just goes from one end to the other.
Yeah, it's like that. It's like a visual of the energy that kind of just goes there.
One more image to throw into the wall here. That's this image for the morning. I think of the caterpillar. Mm-hmm. At a certain point in its life, it does nothing but eat. It gorges itself. Gorgy, gorgy, gorgy. Biscuit, you know. And then it's preparing for something, but it doesn't really know what, you know. So it just eats. And gets all full, and then these things called imaginal cells start growing inside of it. And what happens is it's sort of like our immune system will attack something foreign. Well, the caterpillar didn't have what's happening here. Nobody knows. The caterpillar didn't have those imaginal cells before, so its immune system attacks them and kills them. You know, so this is, and so then the imaginal cells just keep growing until they take over, but it takes a while. And then the imaginal cells, I guess, start eating all that extra stuff that's inside the caterpillar, and it becomes a cocoon, you know, and then the imaginal cells grow into a butterfly, and there's this huge transformation. And I can just see how that's kind of a metaphor for what we're doing, because in the beginning, it's like, you know, it's like really, really hard, and those imaginal cells get crushed by the old self that wants to kill the, you know, any change. And yet, because life is what's doing it, and life is what's coming through us, our imaginal cells just keep growing, and especially if we practice. And then we kind of eat up
the old self.
The old self, whatever has been there, we kind of, you know, back up and emerge. Is this image working? Okay. I just thought of it and then I realized maybe it wasn't so good though. I love those, that idea. That's kind of new for me. I just learned recently that what starts the butterfly is these imaginal cells.
Yeah. Perceived as foreign.
Yeah. And the poor old caterpillar, he doesn't know what's going on. He's just trying to keep being a caterpillar. You know, and that's what our ego is trying to do, is keep being itself and having our life force to live on. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. And that's our time. Thank you.